good morning. Hope everybody's doing well. Why are you laughing about the 8:15 service? What's going on? What I've appreciated about you all here at 11 is you're like, we're praying for you. We're praying for you. Appreciate that. Listen, you know, next Sunday is a big day, right? It's on top of us. School starting. I know for some of you, it's already started this week. For some of you, it will be starting this week. We're starting a brand new series next Sunday called No Longer. And we're looking into the book of Galatians. And Galatians, at a big picture level, Galatians teaches us two things. Number one, it teaches us that we're not okay. And we all know it on a spiritual level, right? We know that the deepest level, the toughest problems in our hearts, like we can't seem to solve those on our own. But the second thing Galatians teaches us is that it's okay that we're not okay. Because God sent his one and only son, he sent Jesus, and by his grace, he can step into our hearts and lives and he can change us in the spaces, in the places, and the ways that we can't change ourselves. So as you leave today, maybe whenever you came in today, maybe you got a red card. It looks a little bit like this. It's just a card letting us know what the series is and is about. I hope you'll take this card. I'm prayerful that we're gonna pass out thousands of these cards this week in inviting people to come and to enjoy us and to join us in the new series. As we're wrapping up today, this series called Free, Paul has said to us in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 that Christians are generous people. The way that we've said it every week is that people who are marked by grace, Christians, right? People who receive the grace of God, people who are marked by grace, right? That there's this, freed by grace are marked by generosity. And in the chapter that we're gonna look at today, we've looked at chapter 8 the past couple of weeks. We look at chapter 9 today. What you're gonna hear Paul say 6 different times, he uses some form of that word generosity, generous, generosity, be generous. You're gonna hear it, it's over and over again in chapter 9. And so Paul is gonna unpack that for us, talking about the principles of the harvest. And I think it's important that when Paul talks about generosity, he's not just talking about our resources and the things that God gives to us. But another example of generosity is people who are generous with their time. At the end of last year, we asked a question. We said, what would it be like if our church prayed and fasted? Somebody prayed and fasted from our church every calendar day of the year in 2026. If you've read the Gospels before, you know that Jesus said, my house shall be called a house of prayer. And we do a lot of great things in church world and church life. But he didn't say, my house shall be called a house of all those other things, right? He said, my house shall be called a house of prayer. So starting in January of this year, either a staff member or one of our life group leaders has covered every single day of the calendar this year in prayer and fasting. It's been a great initiative. We've seen God's activity throughout the year, but now we wanna open the initiative up to our whole church. So I'm gonna invite you to pick a day on the calendar to cover in prayer and fasting this fall. So if you would, grab your phone. If you've got your phone, you can go into the app notes, right? If you're looking at the app notes or their message notes are on lpguest.com. Or maybe the easiest way to connect would be to just text the word prayer to 75642. So there's a link in the app notes if you're using the message notes, or you can just text the word prayer, 75642. I'm gonna encourage you today to pick one or 2 days to fast and to pray. And remember, we talked about fasting last year, right? Fasting doesn't make us super Christians. We're not fasting to say, okay, God, look how precious we are to you. Actually, it's just the opposite. Fasting makes God more precious to us because it helps us grow in spiritual awareness, to open our eyes, to see the things that God is doing around us. Just like you heard Andrew talk about this morning, right? Like somebody had to have their eyes open spiritually to see what God was doing in him and to invite him to come to know the God who has given him grace, the God who's died for him, the God who was resurrected for him. So pick a day, pick 2 days. Don't everybody pick next week, right? We're trying to cover the whole fall to the end of the year. Pick a couple of days. We'll send you a reminder back after you sign up, so don't worry. And the reason I'm asking you to do it now is because I know I know how we are as people, right? What gets on your calendar is what gets done, right? There's a whole list of prayer requests. They're very specific things we're praying over the life of our church that are there that'll help you in that day, that 24-hour window. And we hope you join us as we seek to reach that 1% of our local community, those 500 new people throughout this year. Now, as Paul talks about generosity in 2 Corinthians 9, like I said, he's going to talk about the law or the principles of the harvest. He's going to use that metaphor with us today. He's going to say three things about the harvest. Number one, God supplies it. And then he's going to tell us that God multiplies it. And then the third thing he's going to say is that God is glorified by it. Those are the three things that we're going to look at. So get a copy of 2 Corinthians 9, turn over there, and we will jump in. First verse is 10. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase your harvest of righteousness. So like I said, the first thing is that God supplies it. God supplies the harvest. I'm gonna show you up here this cycle, right? This harvest cycle that Paul talks about. I'll show you the first part of it. So what does God supply? What does he say in the verse? He supplies two things, bread and seed, right? Those are the two things that he supplies. So bread, that represents your food, right? And then seed, that represents your future in a lot of ways. Bread represents your today, seed represents your tomorrow. So Paul is saying to us that God is the supplier of your today and your tomorrow. So what happens is that God gives us, right, resources, and he illustrates that with seed. And so you and I are called to sow the supply of God that he gives to us. And then what do you have to do? You got to wait. You have to be patient because the harvest takes time. And any good farmer will tell you that you do everything you can do above ground, right? You plow, you fertilize, you water, you plant, you do everything you can do. But the moment you put that seed in the ground and you cover it up, you just have to be patient and you have to wait because God is he's the supplier. We have this odd relationship with the things that God puts in our hands. I mean our resources, the things that he gives us, right? So God gives us stuff. Not as owners, that's kind of how we think about it, but really we're stewards of the stuff that God gives to us. And there's a lot of times in our lives when we know, we sense God speaking to us about sowing, but man, we live clenched fist, right? This clenched fist way where we just want to hold on to it instead of freely giving it, instead of freely sowing it. Last week, I was getting on a plane to come home from Atlanta. I'd been down there for some church planting meetings. So I had three seats on this side of the aisle, three seats on the other side. I'm an aisle seat guy. So I was in my seat and a lady came up, threw a bag over the top. She was decked in collegiate gear. And she says, hey, I've got the window seat. So I was getting out of the seat and trying to, you know, make small talk. And I was like, do you work at the university? And she's just happy, man. She's just one of those people. She's eyebrows up, smiling. She says, yeah, I'm a coach. Guess what sport? I didn't want a game of Jeopardy, right? I was just trying to be cordial, right? So I was like, wow, I don't know. She said, I'm the cheer coach. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Perfect, right? We will F-L-Y our way. I mean, like that was just, and she was great. She was just encouraging, smiling. So she sits over by the window, right? And so we're sitting there a couple minutes later, young man, maybe mid-20s. He says, hey, I've got the middle seat. So he comes in, he sits down. She immediately starts chatting him up, right? And they're talking. And he's like, yeah, my wife and I are coming back to Columbus. We're going home. He's like, she's sitting on the other side of the aisle in the middle seat over there. And the cheer coach was like, oh, she's like, hey, I'll go over there and take her seat and she can come over here and sit with you. And this to me was so funny. The young guy's like, nah, we're good. We're good. Trouble in paradise, right? Now we're I can see her over there. We're okay. And I just thought, you know, in relationship to the resources that God gives to us, the things that God puts into our hands, our possessions, so many times we think we hold them, but really, a lot of times our possessions hold on to us. And when it comes to God and our relationship with Him as our supplier, I'll just say for a lot of us, and I'm not talking just about our financial resources here, but all the things that get your mental acumen, your abilities, you know what? We're content to just let God sit across the aisle. We want to see Him just in case we need Him, in case there's a crisis, like we want to be, but we don't want Him so close that He gets into the business of our lives and He changes our behavior. And He changes our faith, and He changes the way that we live. But Paul says, listen, you're missing this. You're missing the harvest in your life because you don't see God. You don't see Him as the supplier. The beauty of God is that God does not ask us to give anything that He didn't first give to you, right? That's who God is. A lot of you are gonna look at me and they're like, no, Dean. I'm self-made. I work hard. Good for you. Paul told the Colossians, do all of your work as unto the Lord. In other words, work like God is your boss. You should go to work every day. You should be the best employee in your company. Absolutely, you should be. But let me ask you this. Who gave you the breath and the brains to do what you do? See, God supplies that. Who put you into the opportunity? You're like, no, I create the opportunity. But who put you here? Who gave you the opportunities that you could have been born 1,000 years ago and raised in the Andes Mountains of South America without the technology, without the opportunities, without the creature comforts that we have today? Now see, Paul says God is the supplier, but He's not just the supplier. Look at verse 11. It says this to them, you will be enriched. Important word right there. You will be enriched in every way to be generous. How? In every way, which through us will produce thanksgiving to God. So God not only supplies it, but God multiplies it. Let me show you the end here, the second half of the harvest cycle, right? We sow and then we wait. And then all of a sudden the harvest comes. And what the amazing thing about the harvest is that God multiplies the harvest, right? What do you get? You get more bread for today. You get more seed for tomorrow. But the multiplication of that seed, right? One kernel. Let's talk about grain, maybe. You drop one kernel of grain in the ground, what do you get back? Well, you get a stalk of grain, and that stalk of grain has up to 50 more seeds. You went from one seed to 50 seeds. God exponentially multiplies the harvest. And that mentality, this cycle takes what? Time. I want to be real clear and real careful. Right? So the way that God, the way that He gives us resources and He multiplies them, it's not a one-to-one ratio. It's not a 1-to-2 or a 1-to-10, right? This is not the Christian get-rich-quick scheme. It's not that you give and immediately the next week, hey, God's gonna give you back 50-fold or 100-fold, or it doesn't always work that way. As a matter of fact, I can tell you a few stories of people who've taken that step to begin giving faithfully as a priority. Every time they get paid, they give part of that as a priority back to God to fuel His kingdom work. And sometimes you do that and you know what? You get a setback. The washer breaks, the car breaks, and you're like, hey, what gives? Somebody told me that where I give and God gives. And this is not Christian multi-level marketing, right? It doesn't work that way. But you know how it does work? The flip side of that, I've never met a person, not one person, who's been generous with the resources that God has given to them, invested them in their local church through the harvest, who towards the end of their life would say, you know what? God wasn't faithful to His promise. God didn't live up to supplying my needs according to His riches and glory in Christ Jesus. But the people that I meet who are further along in life, who've been consistent, who by faith have sown, are the people who are the most joyful, the most generous, the most giving, the most peaceful, the most content, because God multiplies the harvest of their obedience. Now, here's what I love about it. This changes the question when it comes to our resources, because for a lot of us, we've talked about it, this 3 weeks in this series, and a lot of us, the question that comes up on the inside is, okay, man, how much? How much do I have to give? We have all these weird questions. Like, do I have to give pre-tax or do I have to give post-tax? Like, how does he figure out what, how much do I have to? This completely changes the question. It's not how much do you have to give. How much do you want to reap? How much joy, how much contentment, how much peace, how much financial peace in your future do you want? Because the principle of the harvest is that the more you sow, the more you reap. We should be the most open-handed, generous people, because we understand that after time, as we invest in obedience, in faith, that God always lives up to his promise. Paul says here, now listen, you don't understand, God's the multiplier. The word he uses there is enricher. It's the word plutsamenoi. The root word of that is where they got their word for Pluto. The Greek god Pluto was the god in the underworld. He was the god who was in charge of the underground resources, minerals like gold and silver, right? So they would look to Pluto for those underground resources. But the other part was that they believed that he was the god of agriculture, that he was the god who was down there making seeds grow up into a harvest. So you see what Paul is saying here? So profound to me as I studied this week. God is always at work underground. You do everything you can do up here above the soil. You sow the seed, you fertilize, right? You do everything you can do. You plant, you plow, you water. But underground, where you can't see it, where it takes time, God is always at work. He is at work underground. And so it's, I don't know how you think about that, but one way that I think about that is, how did this work in the early church? Like, how did the early church, how did we go from a handful of 12 apostles to what we have today? It's amazing when you think about it. About 20 or 30 years or so after the last apostle, John, died, archaeologists have discovered a letter. It was written by an anonymous Christian to a guy named Dio Gentus. And I just want to read to you what he says about that how question. How did it expand so fast? Here's what he says. Let me tell you why Christianity is spreading so fast. Christians busy themselves on earth, but their citizenship is in heaven. They live in their native lands, but they live as aliens. For every foreign country is to them as a native land, and every native land is as their foreign country. They marry and have children, but they do not kill unwanted babies. They share their table with everyone, but they don't share their bed with everyone. They love everyone, but are persecuted by all. They are poor and make many rich. They are short of everything and yet have plenty of everything. They are treated outrageously, but behave respectfully. They are mocked and blessed in return. When they do good, they are attacked. And when they are attacked, they rejoice and do good. You want to know how Christianity took over the Roman Empire, spread through the empire like wildfire? There are five things, five characteristics that this letter gives us. And I just want to name them up here real quick so you can see them listed out. Number one, there's an absence of discrimination. He says they live as though their citizenship is in heaven, right? Every native land is as a foreign country. Every foreign country is as a native land. They all see themselves as similar in their need for the work of God. Secondly, was the sanctity of human life. It says they do not kill unwanted babies, womb to tomb. They see God as the author of life. Third was a countercultural view of intimacy. Right? They share their table with anyone. Hospitality was an amazing characteristic of early Christianity. They'd share with anybody, right? But their countercultural view of intimacy said, table with everyone, but not share a bed with everyone. Fourth one, they rejoiced in suffering, right? When they did good, they were attacked. And when they were attacked, they rejoiced and they still did good. They had this amazing spiritual resilience about them. And then the fifth thing was generosity with God's resources, right? Everyone had enough. They were open-handed instead of being so closed-fisted. So what this anonymous Christian is saying to this guy, Diogenes, is listen, when you see somebody who has these five characteristics, what you're seeing is a Christian. That's what Christians look like. That's the kind of Christianity, right, that took over the Roman Empire. So how did that work here in Corinth, right? Corinth was the Las Vegas of the ancient world. Look at verse 12. It says this, "For the ministry of this service is not only supplying the needs of the saints, but is also overflowing in many thanksgivings to God." Now you remember the context, if you've been around the past couple of weeks, the context of 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 is that they were taking up an offering, or at least they committed to take up an offering to send by some of the leaders of the church back to the church in Jerusalem. Church in Jerusalem was experiencing severe persecution. And so they had written to Paul and said, "Hey Paul, we're gonna take up a financial offering to send to those Christians who were struggling." And so you look back at that verse, Paul says, listen, by the ministry of this service. In other words, this offering that you talked about taking up, it's a great offering, but they hadn't done it yet. And so Paul is saying, hey, listen, you told them you were gonna take up this offering. You committed to this. Now we need you to follow through. And the ministry of what's about to happen is gonna overflow in thanksgiving. It's gonna build and build and build more and more gratitude. Don't you see that? It's just so interesting to me when I read contemporary articles about the things that help people with mental health and all those other, and one of the things today that's kind of a hot button is gratitude. You need to be grateful for all of the, this 2,000 years old, right? It's right here in the scriptures. Paul says, listen, as you're generous and as you get involved and as you give sacrificially in other people's lives, guess what? It builds gratitude, not only in them, but in you. And you are a very gracious people. Last year, through our church, right? I say a lot, you don't give to our church, you give through our church. Last year, we gave just north of $1.5 million to missions outside, to the work outside of our church to impact other people's lives, the majority of whom you're never gonna meet. I said that wrong. You're not gonna meet them here. But what will it be like someday in eternity when you get to meet people that you have generously given towards through our church to be reached in other places in North America, other places around the globe and around the world, when people come to you and say, you know what, thank you. Thank you, because of your giving, it made a difference. I mean, how many Andrews are there that you don't even know about, right? And that as you're a partner in giving, it makes a difference. Earlier this year, right, we invited our whole church to take a step towards sponsoring a translation of the Bible for folks in the Southern Caucasus Mountains in Russia. These are people, about a million of them, who live up in the Southern Caucasus Mountains, very remote, out of touch with the rest of the modern world for the most part. They have no copy of the Bible in their language. And you generously gave towards that project. We checked in with the translators recently, and we found out that they're about 18% of the way there to a full translation of the Bible in the dialect of these Dagestani peoples. So as you are giving, you are making investments that are making a difference, that are overflowing in many thanksgivings to God. Look at the next verse, then in verse 13. So Paul says, by their approval of this service, they will glorify God because of your submission that comes from your confession of the gospel. Isn't that interesting that Paul says your level, your reflection of generosity, like this is a way that you tell the gospel. So our generosity, the way that we live our lives, is a reflection of what we really believe about the good news of God and the generosity of your contribution for them and for all the others. So the third idea there, right, is that your generosity brings God glory. Your generosity, my generosity, it brings God glory. And so as we enter this fall season, I think we've got a unique opportunity for generosity, for an expression of that in the life of our church. There's a Christian research company, it's a pretty large research company called the Barna Institute, or the Barna Research Institute. And they did some research over the last 100 years of people who are entering into vocational ministry. In other words, they're doing that as their full-time occupation. And what came out of that report is that over the last 100 years, the Barna team says that there has been a 75% reduction. I'll say that to you again. A 75% reduction in the number of young people who are entering into vocational ministry. Now, what that means for us is that in the coming century, over the next 100 years, that means, that equates to a reduction in the number of churches in our country by about 150,000 to 200,000 churches. So in other words, because of this reduction of young people headed towards vocational ministry, in the next 100 years, it is entirely possible that 150,000 to 200,000 churches will shutter their doors just because there's nobody there who's ready and willing to step in and lead. And I think a lot of us who are believers, we talk about how excited we are, you know, about what's going on college campuses right now, and this renewal, this what feels like a revival in some places of college students who are turning their hearts back God's direction, this renewal, this movement of young people, high school students right now. I believe that the reason, at least in part, why God is doing that is because we're gonna refill the pipeline with young people who are open to ministry as vocation. And so one of the things that we have done here over the past couple of years to 18 months is that we started an intentional residency. So we have students and collegians, some folks even who are adults who have said, you know what, I wanna explore God's activity in my life in terms of vocational calling towards ministry. And so typically folks come first, they're interns typically, and then they say, you know what, I'll step into that 2-year residency and I'll continue to investigate what God is doing. I'll show you a picture up here. We showed it to you, I don't know, maybe a few months ago. These are the current resident, actually Micah there on the bottom. He's finished his 2-year residency, just stepped into full-time ministry on our staff and students at Westerville. And then here's a picture of our interns from the summer. Our internships kind of have ended, but there on the bottom right, Sarai and Silas, they're taking a step now into a 2-year residency to continue to investigate their calling. And so here's the generosity opportunity that's in front of us. One of the barriers that we have towards our residency is housing. Now, some of you have been very kind to house a resident for a few months, and we have extended that a little bit, and you've been even more kind for a couple of more, but we've kind of bounced our residents around house to place, here to there. And so what we're gonna do this fall is we're gonna buy housing. We're gonna buy a couple of 2-bedroom flats for our residents, one for guys and one for gals, especially for those residents who are coming in from out of town, right, who are coming in who don't have housing with their family. What we're gonna do is, Lewis Center, our campus here, we're gonna purchase one of those 2-bedroom flats. Our other 5 campuses combined are gonna purchase one of those 2-bedroom flats. And so it's gonna cost a little north of $300,000 once everything's all settled out and done. And I believe that you will be prayerful about it and be generous, because it's our opportunity to answer a need for your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. So that over the next 100 years, we don't see a reduction, but we see an increase in planting churches and seeing people reached. You know, Friday of this week, mine and Angie's, our son, he got married Friday night. And so we have three kids. We have older sons in the middle, and then we have another daughter. So girl, boy, girl. And so I shared this story at the rehearsal dinner because I was reminded about, you know, as a dad, you look at your kids, and I remember the night that I knew my son was gonna be okay. Our kids were 6, 4, and 1 at the time. So girl, boy, girl. We were taking them to Florida. I was speaking at a camp down there, and the camp graciously was gonna allow me to bring them with me. We stopped in Maryville, Tennessee at a Cracker Barrel, right? I wanted to get the kids out, let them walk around a little bit. So I was walking around with my son, with Dylan, around the Cracker Barrel. And there was an older gentleman who was sitting in a rocking chair, been a Cracker Barrel, by the checkerboard. And so we walk by, Dylan looks at the checkerboard, and the older gentleman, he says to Dylan, he's like, "You wanna play some checkers?" And Dylan looked up at me, and I was like, "Sure, buddy." So I sat him up in the rocking chair, and they played a little game of checkers. And whenever they were done, the older gentleman, he looked at Dylan and he said, "Are you gonna go over in the store and buy some candy?" And Dylan looked at me and he looked at that older gentleman like, "You don't know my dad. We don't spend money, right? We're not spending any money in the Cracker Barrel store, right?" And so he gets his wallet out and he hands Dylan a dollar and he says, "Hey, you need to go buy yourself some candy." Well, just a couple of minutes earlier, Sydney, our oldest, our six-year-old, she had walked by and Dylan had said hello to her, you know, and he's like, "And you know what? You've got a sister. She needs a dollar." And so he gave him $2. And this is when I knew my son was gonna be okay. He looked at that older gentleman and he said, "I've got a younger sister too." I knew he was gonna make it. I knew he was gonna be just fine, right? And listen, I think about some of you, and I know for some of us, man, giving financially is a brand new concept. The idea of giving, even starting, is a new concept. But for some of you, man, you've been generous for a really long time. You're like that older gentleman sitting in that rocking chair, and you've got the spiritual gift of giving. I don't know if you know that or not. That's named in the New Testament. That's a spiritual gift. For some people, generosity is not a responsibility. But generosity goes beyond that. It's a joy. And you enjoy hearing about other opportunities to give and other opportunities to sacrifice. We actually have a life group here of folks who kind of have that spiritual gift. So they get together, they study God's word, and then they talk and look for other opportunities to give towards. Maybe that's a life group that you'd like to be part of. You can just send us an email, info@lifepointohio.com. We'll help you get connected. But I believe this opportunity, this purchasing housing for our residents, and I believe this is one of those generosity opportunities. And so if you're excited about that and you want to give towards that over and above your regular, you know, giving to our general budget, that's really the engine that drives everything we do. But if you'd like to do that, you can just put the words "Life Point Forward," those two words, "Life Point Forward," in the memo line of your giving, and we'll make sure that it gets steered towards this housing initiative. And like I said, super, super grateful for all that you do. Here's how Paul lands this text. He says in verse 14, "While they long for you and pray for you, because of the surpassing grace of God upon you, thanks be to God for his inexpressible gift." You see what Paul does there? All along the way in the passage, he's been saying, your giving, your gift, your generosity. And all of a sudden right there, he says, thanks be to God for his inexpressible gift. What gift is that? Is that the seed that God gives us? I think it's more than that. I think it's the verse, right? The most communicated verse probably in Christendom around the world is John 3:16. "For God so loved the world that he," what's the next word? Gave. What's the next word? Gave. "For God so loved the world that he gave his inexpressible gift." What's his gift? "For God so loved the world that he gave" what? "His one and only son, so that whoever," and you can put your name in that line. Just fill in that blank. Just take out whoever and put your name. "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever," that Gabe, that Michael, Miranda, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. See, we give because God gave. Giving is not just a discipline. It's not just an obedient act of faith. Giving is an act of worship because God has given so much to us. We refuse to live close-handed, close-fisted, but we want to be open-handed people with all of the resources that God puts into our hands. The gift, the ultimate gift, right, is not so much about what God gives, but about who God put on a cross to pay for your sins and my sins. And one of the great things about today is that we get to see people, 12 people across both services, go public with their faith in baptism as a way of saying publicly, I used to be somebody who wasn't okay. I used to be somebody who was flawed and broken, but all of a sudden now, because of the grace of God, I'm okay. Then I'm not okay because Jesus has stepped in the gap. He has done for me what I couldn't do for myself. And you know, whenever people are baptized here, they fill out a form. And we try and help them condense that down. Amy on our team does a great job to kind of a few sentences that fit up on the screen so you get to see or hear a little bit of their story. But this week I read an excerpt off of a man who's gonna be baptized this morning. His name is Joshua. And I just wanted to read you this little piece of his story that came off of his form. It said this, he said, I am part of the Regen group for men. That's one of our men's life groups. He said, I'm part of the Regen group for men. I was a Marine for 20 years and I was a liar and an imposter. Now I want you to listen to the beautiful humility that the gospel brings. You can be honest with yourself about your flaws and your brokenness. He says, I was a liar and an imposter. I attended church, I said the right things, but I was empty and hollow. Now I have been born again. I'm a little scared because I expect to be attacked spiritually and I need your prayers. And so these people, as they come this morning, they come expecting us to pray. That's why we're trying to cover every day of the year with prayer and fasting. That's why we're trying to cover them and the activity of what God is doing in their lives. And that's why we get to rejoice with them in many thanksgivings, because we all have a part in every person who's baptized this morning. Let's pray. God, we're incredibly excited about your activity in our lives and in the lives of other people and in the life of our church. God, we ask you this morning that you will use these stories to encourage those of us who are brothers and sisters in the faith and to draw people maybe this morning, God, who are holding you at arm's length, who are keeping you across the aisle, to take that faith step as well. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Would you stand and we'll